This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey everybody, it's Josh Rutledge, your co-host for Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to support us more, please head over to our website, fearscapepodcast.com. There you can click on store and browse some really awesome t-shirts and maybe pick a couple up, or even go to our Patreon page and see how you can support us monthly. We love bringing you awesome content just as much as you like listening to it. Enjoy the show.
Hello. I'm so glad you could join us. I hope you brought your blanket to hide under. The spooky crew is going to discuss things and events from other realms. Ghosts, cryptids, aliens. Be sure to hold your blanket extra tight as the boys take you deep into the Fearscape.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Sound effects are created by myself and my co-host. So my name is Steph. Don't talk until I introduce you, young man. Oh boy, starting off strong. My name is Stephen Gearhart, your host for the evening, and I am joined by co-host Josh Rutledge. How are you today?
I'm doing swell. I'm stuck at home with my kids for 5-6 weeks.
Yeah. I guess if I was stuck at home with you, I'd be stressed out. But no, thank you guys for tuning in. We have a really cool episode. We're going to be talking about Indrid Cold. This is the alien that was talked about in John Keel's book, Mothman Prophecies.
We don't know alien, right?
Well, according to said book and lore, the possible alien.
Non-humanoid.
Yes. Also made popular by Woody Derenberger in his book Visitors from Lanulos, the man who met Indrid Cold himself. And we also have a very, 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 very special guest. The man we talk about all the damn time, yep. Santosh. Hi, Santosh.
Hello, me.
Little old you. It's good to have you on the show. We had you on the show way back in the day, but now we've got you, just you, and you're here with Josh and I now.
Yeah, back in the day.
Bam, 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 bam. Air horse, no. Air horse, blah, 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 nah.
Yeah. So one of the reasons we invited Santosh on is that we all became obsessed with Hellier together. We all became obsessed with John Keel's book, The Mothman Prophecies, as well as Visitors from Lanulos, all of that. There was no better person to talk with about Indrid Cold than Mr. Santosh himself. So we're very pumped to have you here. But now, before we get into that, I want to get into our psychic word of the week. All right, this comes from the Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary from June Bletzer. And this, of course, came from my good friend Barbara Jordan, who passed away. God rest her soul.
Don't you know?
Original.
And the phrase for this week is etheric counterpart. What this means is an invisible, refined order of matter that surrounds every material object and living organism, including humans, in Earth, which is an exact replica of that object or organism. This refined order of matter consists of various kinds of astral matter and is formed following the pattern of the mental plane. Astral objects and organisms are formed before they manifest in Earth. The psychic can, therefore, tune into the future of Earthlings and Earth objects by reaching an astral alpha level of awareness. This can also be seen in colors as the outer part of the aura. Do not confuse with the luminous mist or etheric double section of the aura that clings close to the object or organism.
So it's like a precursor.
Kinda.
It came before you. Or whatever.
I mean, it's basically, it's your counterpart. I mean, it's your energetic counterpart, right. I guess, in the ether, so to speak. And it is essentially what psychics can tap into if you're not physically in the room.
It's your energy doppelganger.
Yeah, or you're the energy doppelganger.
Well, yeah. We like to blow minds around here.
Well, it's basically just the concept of the first astral plane, you know, like that mirror level that you have to get out of so you don't get caught in, and when you're really exploring the different levels of
So you're talking about the Wright brothers' first astral plane.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Kitty Hawk.
Is that
not a Silver Hawk, Kitty Hawk.
Oh, and not Kitty Pride.
No.
Is this an astro plane or
no? Astro, astro the dog plane. From the Jetsons. We had this conversation on Fierce Cape Unhinged. It is astral, not astro.
I'm gonna go astral traveling. I'm gonna open up a bar in the astral planes. I've been to one. Now I'm gonna call it the astro plane. It'll be like Jetson's theme.
Yes, that's hilarious.
In my astro plane.
Shut up, God. All right. Well, let's.
I thought the name of the bar was By the Witch. I thought that was.
That is a good one. Since it's on our show, copyrighted. Let's move in. Before we get even going into the topic, we have lots of stuff to cover today, so we're going to move right into a little bit of spooky news. All right, so spooky news is actually coming from you, Josh, not from me, because I forgot to find some.
Yeah, because you slacked a little bit.
I did.
It's okay. That's all right.
Working from home, too.
Yeah, I know.
I'm stuck at home with my dog and two cats.
I mean, you normally have an abundance of time at work. What do you not have at home? I don't understand. Your bathroom's closer.
Now my wife's working home, too, so she's like, these dishes need done. Honeydew list got long.
All right, this comes from space.com, and it says, how will NASA deal with the moon dust problems for Artemis lunar landing? So in case anybody hasn't heard, there was an announcement made like a few months back that by 2024, we're going back to the moon. And not only are we going back to the moon for like exploration, but we're actually setting up colonies on the moon.
That I did hear, yeah.
And the name of the colony is Artemis.
Right.
So go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that I'm super pumped about that. Though a little frightened. I don't know if you remember the Time Machine remake movie where he's moving into the future and he gets into like 2030.
And the moon like is broken
because they had mined it.
Right, yeah.
So look out, it's coming.
So there's a couple of things here that I think are really cool with the selection. So I'll get into the article in just a second, but Artemis, there's a book that came out.
Artemis Fowl?
No, there's a book that came out.
That series.
The movie's coming out for that.
Well, this came out in 2017, and it's framed from the same author that wrote The Martian that was made into a movie. Matt Damon played the main character, Mark Watney. Anyways, and the name of the base on the moon in the book?
Artemis. Well, okay, so I get that then. I mean, Space Force is using the Starfleet symbol, so I mean, I guess that's what we're doing now. Right. The government's like, what else can we steal from?
So this article goes on to say that basically there's a lot of problems with moon dust because moon dust is a little bit of a misnomer because there is no actual dust in the way that we understand dust on the moon, you know, dust being the collection of organic particles.
Dude, I was getting worried. I mean, could you imagine the moon dust bunnies?
Well, so moon dust on the moon is just dirt. Really fine rocks.
Oh, well, I mean, that's what sand is, right?
Yeah. So it's almost finer than sand. It's like microscopic sand, if you will. And so in the book called Artemis, they actually talk about that a lot because they have all these airlock systems in place to make sure that none of that moon dust comes into the internal complex because it could be recycled in the air. And if you were to breathe that into your nose... I mean, imagine
like diatomaceous earth, and it could really mess you up.
I was going to mention that, or like talcum powder, or miners deal with that and stuff. And I can,
Are you going to get that old moon lung?
Yeah, you got Dad, I got the moon lung.
It's called white lung.
It's called white lung. I've got the gray lung. Oh my God.
You and your lunar privilege.
I'm trying to think. There was there's been a couple times where I've been places where you knew after a while you were gonna be like your snot was gonna be covered with
I mean, we've done construction work. Yeah. You and I both have. And you know, when you're working with drywall, you get white boogers. And when you're working with fiberglass insulation, those are the worst. So, yeah, I mean, but imagine that. So that's one of the concerns is like, how's it going to interact with the, you know, the colonies are going to set up on the planet. But also, when they blast off, when they leave the moon, and even when they land on the moon, it blows up all kinds of that dust, goes everywhere. It actually blows it up into the orbit around the moon. And so if they have a lot of planned visits over time, you're going to end up with like a cloud of moon dust around the moon.
So then you're going to need to do, there was this episode of DuckTales where Launchpad had a snowplow put on the front of his plane so that he could move rain clouds in and out of systems so that they could control the weather. Yeah,
just like the Care Bears somehow walk around on the clouds.
On the cloud, as does God.
Yeah, and fly in the cloud cars.
So, yeah, they're going to need to get a plane with a snowplow. Yeah,
they'll just recycle one of the shuttles.
Yeah, or just get the Spaceballs vacuum cleaner.
It's gone from suck to blow.
Oh, shit. Spaceballs.
So, yeah. So, that's basically the synopsis of the article. I could read through it line by line, but I did do the work of me reading it and you telling you what it is. So,
thanks. Space.com. Your voice grates on my ears. So, you have a voice for silent films.
Well, last week you told me I had a body or a face for radio. Now I don't even have a voice for radio. He just replaced me with a freaking piano.
Yes, I believe that. What do you think?
You, sir, have a disembodied essence for this.
Next thing you know, you're going to tell me I got the voice for print.
No, that'd be Audible.
Yeah.
Not sponsored.
Yeah, not sponsored. Your voice is color. All right, so that's our spooky news. But let's go ahead and move into our very close to home UFO sighting of the week. So I'm gonna still let you handle this, Josh, but I'm gonna set this baby up. Last week, Josh and I had an old school sleepover. Like we was in school. He braided my hair. Yep. I braided his hair. We made cookies and
talked about all the boys.
It was beautiful. Yeah. But no, we did. We spent broke the night the and did a lot of recording, recorded some Fearscape Unhinged. We also went out to Waverly and did some cool things, which we'll talk about in Creepy Ketchup. But whilst Weeze was there, we saw a UFO.
So what?
Yes. Yep. Yes. So I'm trying to, what was the name of the star?
Capella.
Yeah. Okay.
Goat eyes. Female goat.
Yep. So in the night sky, it was like, what, about 1 a.m. or so when we were out there?
Yeah. 12:30, 1 o'clock.
Yep. So in the night sky, there was an arrangement of stars, but one of them was a very bright star, and it's Capella. Mm-hmm. And if you look it up, Capella is one of the brighter stars in the sky. And on a moonlit night, it's still even.
Yeah, I mean, and it was a pretty crispy night. Yeah. I mean, you could see for miles. I mean, we're in the city.
I mean, we're in the city, so there's light pollution.
But you can still see the main constellations.
Yeah, exactly. So, look, I close the door, and I just, because this is something I do all the time in the nighttime, I look up to see the sky. I like to do it. Mm-hmm. So same. I look up, and I see this bright star, and I'm like, I stare at it for a little while, and I'm thinking, that's moving.
And I'm staring up at it, and I'm thinking to myself, that thing's zigzagging.
Yeah. So it's like it kind of does like a little loop-de-loo, and then it does some zigzagging back and forth. And so, Stefan, you actually pulled out your phone with your super telescope.
Yeah, so I've got the new Samsung S20 Ultra 5G, and it has the 100x space zoom. Well, I didn't zoom all the way in like that because it's hard to keep in frame. But it records in 8K, and I recorded this sucker moving.
Yeah.
And we've brightened it up. I mean, this thing's moving right to left. It's bouncing. And I mean, this is like the first point when I was looking at it, not when I recorded, but the first point when I'm looking at it, it was like, if you've ever been able to shake your eyeballs, like, you know, some people can do that.
Mine are pretty firmly like, placed.
I can look at you and make my eyes go. That's what it looked like to me at first. It was like vibrating and it was pulsating too.
Yeah, it was.
Like it was changing colors. It was like orange to yellow to blue to red to orange to green. I mean, it was like pulsating different colors. And that's what finally I had to pull out my phone and it stopped recording on its own. I didn't hit stop. It stopped recording on its own. And but yeah, it like goes to the right, and we'll post this video for all skeptics to scrutinize. And we posted it, all that stuff, and then it just kept throughout the rest of the night.
Throughout the rest of the night, it kept on going. Now, when we got back to my house later on that night, it had gotten cloudy, and so you couldn't see it anymore. And honestly, it's been cloudy every night since, so I haven't been able to go out. But I plan on taking my telescope. I have a special lens for my telescope that allows me to record video to a computer that I'll see through the telescope.
Yeah.
I plan on taking that out there and see if I can
capture it. To reiterate, the weird thing is that it was Capella, because you know, at first I thought maybe this thing is hiding in front of Capella, right? And it's moving around. But then if it would, you know, moved around, I feel like we would have seen Capella sit behind it.
Well, that's so I almost feel like there was something in between the two.
Right.
That was blocking the view of Capella. This thing was pretending to be Capella.
Correct. That's what I felt too.
And then moving around for anybody who happens to be looking.
Yeah.
And you actually found some other reports the same night.
Same night.
In different, like one was in Pennsylvania, another was in like New Jersey or something.
Yeah, I think it was New Jersey. Yeah. No, it wasn't New Jersey. It was somewhere on the other side of the country. But still.
Washington.
Washington, yeah. Washington and Pennsylvania.
So the other people saw similar things. Yeah, so anyway.
So it wasn't just us. Yeah, I mean, we pulled up MUFON and we read those stories. Give me a second here. I might even be able to pull that up.
But yeah, so I mean, it was I have seen some spectacular things in the sky before. I would classify this as probably one of my first UFOs. I did see, you know, about 6 months ago above my house, things that were moving out of sorts, and they would like speed up and then they would slow down and then they would change direction. And so I knew it wasn't a satellite. But that wasn't even aligned to a star. That was just movement.
So from MUFON, it says on the same night, so this was March 13th for people tallying at home. This one says around the same time, it says walking dog and saw an orange colored stationary circular light, stationary, and then moving westward and changing in magnitude. The other one took place in Washington, says trying to imitate the stars, the brightest object in the sky. Seeing, saw it again tonight. Like, and then this one said, saw what I thought was a pulsating star as I started to pay attention to figure out exactly what it was looking at, and then it disappeared. That one was in Florida.
So, yeah, so pretty much different parts of the country all seeing something similar.
Yeah. So that made me feel pretty cool. Made me feel like what we saw was, I mean, there's planes all over the sky, and the way this moved, it moved up and down and right and left, loop-de-loops. Yeah, and, I mean, it was,
and I mean, it was for the distance that it was in the sky, it was not like, so we, you know, we were kind of watching it above a tree.
Yeah.
It didn't really move from like branch to branch. So it wasn't really close to us when it was moving. It was really far off. I mean, really either in space or even farther off, like from us in space. So the other piece that I take from that is that it was really big.
Yeah.
To be able to see it from that far off, that bright.
And it lasted the whole 2 hours we were out there.
Yeah.
So
at one point it zipped like 4 inches to the left, which in space translation, it's like several thousand miles that it jumped in like.
And I'll be posting the two pictures that I took, 'cause I zoomed in on it and it's got a really weird shape.
Yeah.
I zoomed in on it, and so I zoomed in on my own picture and then saved it like that. And then I'll post the video as well.
Yeah. So
that'll be up there the same day this
so
drops.
That's our sighting.
Yeah, so that's our UFO sighting in the week. And that will then lead us straight into Creepy Catch-Up.
Creepy Catch-Up. Creepy Catch-Up. Creepy Catch-Up. Creepy Catch-Up. Y'all, it's creepy.
So, yeah. So, obviously, we're leading straight into Creepy Catch-Up because of the UFO sighting. But what else we did that night at Waverly, which, by the way, we were at Waverly, but we didn't get in.
No, we were
at the gate because they were closed off because of COVID-19. So, we couldn't even get into the parking lot.
But, I mean, we could stay in and see the building.
Yeah, we could see the building. It was creepy as all get out. But, were, yeah, we were in the parking area right in front of the gate.
They were like, they were, you know, it was, well, I guess the weirdest thing was when we first got there and we were looking at that star and there was all this noise. Like there was just, you know, standard nighttime noise. There were frogs croaking.
Yeah, and it was cold. It was too cold for frogs.
And like bugs making noises and all that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden everything stops.
Stops. I mean, dead silence, man.
And then we decided to do, so we did four total Estes method sessions, which for those who don't know, this is something obviously from Hellier, or actually I think it came out really before Hellier.
Yeah, they
used it a lot in Hellier. And it is basically, it's a spirit box session, but you close yourself off to the outside. So you put on some noise-canceling headphones, you put on a sleep mask, and you're tuned in, if you will, to whatever that spirit box
so,
is.
So, yeah, essentially the other person is asking questions, and you're the person that's within the spirit box realm, essentially, is just saying what they hear or saying what they see or feel.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we did four sessions, two apiece, two outside the car, two in the car, with very interesting results.
Yeah. And you know, I guess what the most interesting part of that whole thing is that, you know, for skeptics, you know, you can believe or not believe, but I could hear Stefan talking, and I think you said you could hear me talking, but you couldn't hear what we were saying.
Yeah, it was like
yeah, it's like the, you know, Charlie Brown teacher.
It's exactly what it sounded like. Yeah. So it's like, and only occasionally, it wasn't all the time.
Yeah.
So sometimes I knew that you were either asking a question or speaking or things like that, but I mean, that was like 10% of the time,
yeah,
maybe. Other than that, I mean, the static was pretty loud.
Yeah.
And we also realized we need better headphones, so that has a lot to do with it. Yeah. Which we did some of that when we came back here, so technically we did a lot more than that. But the one I wanted to speak about was Waverly, because let me just tell you, like, being that close to Waverly and knowing that you were closed off from the world meant that I was standing outside in front of Waverly by myself. And it was really creepy because then you would like hear something off in the bush and you'd be like, was that you? And then you'd be like, yes. And you'd be like, and we videotaped all of this. Yeah. So we'll be dropping all of this onto our YouTube channel as well. But yeah, it was really super scary because, I know during my first session with you, where you were in the headphones, you know, I'm pretty sure that I was dealing with someone that was at Waverly that was there and visiting. I felt them behind me and they were like, yes, I'm behind you. And things like that looked like possibly like a janitor. Or
because I think we had like smelly socks,
push broom, and things like that, as well as baby. There was a lot. Yeah. I think this person had also lost their child, at Waverly and things like that. But it was, I mean, it gave me the heebie-jeebies, man.
I mean, when I was doing the one for you on the outside of the car, at one point in time, I think I asked the question like, "Are you here?" And you said yes, and then like I just turned and looked further up the road towards Waverly. And you said, that's me. Do you see me? So,
yeah, there's still a lot that we both don't know because
we haven't watched all the videos
yet. We talked about some things, but I mean, it was pretty intense. The psychic part of me really kicked in at times where we made sure to trust what we saw as well. You know, because there's no electrical pulses because you've got the blindfold on.
Right.
But still, occasionally things would pop into our heads.
Well, so a really good one for that is the one of the sessions we did in the car was me wearing the headphones. And I went back and watched the video. So this is, you said, you know, I'm going to give you some Reiki.
Yeah, I was doing. Yeah. So I wanted to see what would happen if I gave energy and kind of pushed out my psychic energy and Reiki. And as I do it, I raise my hand and I'm shooting the energy across your face. Essentially you go, I see ripples.
Yeah, I did. I saw like waves are going across my vision.
It was crazy, dude. I was like, yes, pudding. It was super fun. Yeah. My grandma Carol showed up.
Yep.
In the second half of that in the car session. Yep. It started off as someone else, which seemed extraterrestrial to me.
Yep.
And then moved to my grandma Carol. And you could tell the difference in the way that you spoke. And I got a lot of confirmation that it was my grandma Carol. Which was really, you came out of that session with me crying.
Well, in that session before me doing it, where you were wearing the headphones, I also was interacting with something that seemed extraterrestrial because it was really wanting me to look up.
Tom Soul.
Yeah.
That was the name it gave us, right. Tom Soul.
Tom Soul, or either Tom Soul, like first name, last name. Or
Tom Soul.
Tom Soul, or.
Or did you get your Tom Souls out?
So anyways, that was that night. We came back here. We did a few more ESSA sessions here, and then we were both exhausted, so we crashed.
Yeah, because we were up till like 5:30.
Yeah. And then I think it was 4:30. Anyway, so then I went to bed and had a crazy dream. You had some crazy dreams.
Yeah.
Which I guess is kind of be expected. Then on Sunday, that night, you had told me that I needed to ask the god and goddess for my real name.
Right. So Santosh, you'll understand this. We got talking about names and their power. Yeah. And we talked, I told him how we as pagans will choose our magical name, that in essence, that is our true name. And giving ourselves that true name has power. And I encouraged Josh to find his. I told him that mine was Phoenix Moon, and I knew that was correct when it first happened, and I even tried to change it within my guard circle, and it just didn't feel right. But whenever I use in ritual Phoenix Moon, there's a power behind it. And so I encouraged Josh to do the same, and interesting result.
Yeah, so I went to bed that night. I laid there. I don't really know what I'm supposed to do, right? I'm new to all this kind of stuff. So I just asked, I said, pretty much the god and goddess, would you, you know, tonight, would you tell me what my real name is? And then kind of fell off to sleep. Woke up sometime later. I don't really know what time it was, but my wife was still up. I think she moved or something. I woke up. But the first words that popped into my head was Star Sapphire. And then went back to sleep, had several dreams involving the words Star Sapphire. The whole next day, couldn't shake the words Star Sapphire. Went to bed Sunday night. I was standing in the shower, and I decided to own it. And so I just closed my eyes and said, you know, I am Star Sapphire. Please show me a truth. And I saw, like, in my mind's eye, two silhouettes of eyes. And then they dissipated, and then I saw a third eye, and then like all kinds of what I can only explain is like a bunch of white, pure white lightning bugs, like millions of them flying, if you will, from this third eye into me, and then all kinds of faces, like alien faces were flashing.
Right, didn't you see one that was like Andorians, but instead of just the antennas themselves had eyeballs in them?
Well, no, that was actually a couple nights before.
Or was that before? Yeah, I got it mixed up.
That was in a dream.
I can't shake that image.
No, this was actually just a bunch of more humanoid-type faces, and I even asked.
Oh, yeah.
I even asked if any of them, like, I was like, are there any that are more human-like?
Right, so this is where Santosh gets looped in here, because we messaged him about this as well, about your dream and the figure, the humanoid that you saw that kind of looked like Thanos a little bit.
Yeah, so the Thanos-looking guy, and actually I found a picture of that, like, from Mesopotamia or something, thousands of years ago. So yeah, I'm walking the dog Monday morning, and the dog is very interested in something in the woods behind my house, which I've told you many times. I feel like there's something back there.
Right, and that's where I'm pretty sure I saw the skinwalker.
Yeah. So
hey! No, just kidding, that's a Jersey Devil.
Yeah. So then, yeah, so my dog is very interested in something back there. I get a like a rush of fear over top of, like, run over me, and I mentally say, or actually I think I verbally said, I'm not ready. I thought I was, but
we
I'm
always
not.
Think we are.
And then my dog was no longer interested in anything. So
that's interesting.
Yeah. So that was my, that's pretty much been my creepy catch up. I have to admit, I have been so tired the last couple of nights that I have not had anything happen since probably that Monday morning. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I've also been kind of, I don't know, I guess I kind of temporarily closed off to it on purpose because it really scared me.
Well, and it's like Andrea said in her book, I mean, you know, at first they were all frightened simply because it occurred.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's going to happen until you feel a little more in control or you get used to it.
Yeah.
But even then, I would tell you, Santosh and I have seen some crazy stuff over the years, and there's still things that still freak me out a lot. And I'm like, I've seen you like 50 times. What about you, Santosh? You have any creepy catch up this week?
Well, I was about to jump in on the end of Josh's.
Jump on in.
Temporarily closed off on purpose, like that, probably not for the scope of what's going on here, but eventually I can tell you, or Steph can tell you about the like the Campbell's Hell period, and I did a big shutdown on purpose. And one of the things that I've been realizing, or that's being made apparent to me in what I call come throughs now, you know, like something that comes through, and mm-hmm. it'll happen as you're waking up from a dream. So a dream come through, or meditation is where I get a lot of them. And so I have to keep post-it notes in my head, and there's different ways of keeping track. And then I have to write them out, and I've been specifically journaling on them and everything too. But one of the big things that I've been doing recently is pondering the fact that I shield and ward my house every night. And that's preventing communication. And I know it is. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, a part of me is unwilling to quit doing the warding practices, because I've gotten so used to turning the faucet. Like, it's like, what the best way I could describe the metaphor is, like, think of it like a faucet. And what you've done is you've closed the faucet, right? Or adjusted the temperature. And if you check it every night, it's almost an OCD type compulsion. And so I'm having to get over the compulsion of the shutdown to open myself back up.
Yeah, that's one thing I've had to teach Josh a little bit, is to filter his shielding a little bit.
Adaptive shielding. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that the things that you want can still get in, but those that cause harm still cannot. But it's interesting, because those things that we perceive that can cause harm are kind of the ones we really want to check out.
I was cleansing the space before this, because I was noticing a lot of interference, and I was like, oh no, I would like this to be clear. This is something I've been looking forward to for 2 months. You know, let's make sure that the high energies don't disrupt, plus little catchers around, which we'll get back into it when we get to Crowley and the actual, like, star sapphire, star ruby rituals, things like that. But to get rid of the little interlopers, you know, that do. Yeah. And think about it this way, Steph. A lot of people like to use smoke cleansing as a practice, mm-hmm. but they don't open up to let out.
Yes. Yes.
So, you know, I opened up the door, and now there's temperature difference, so I'm sure that's what it actually was.
Right.
I was like, okay, little thingies, you know, that stuff that no longer serves, interferes, you know, out, tout, tout, tout. And just a huge gust of wind pulled from behind me for about 5 seconds, you know, like, and I was like, interesting.
Cleansed of all negativity, as I will, so mote it be.
Also, I've been holding on to this for just a second. Creepy ketchup, creepy ketchup, creepy ketchup. Y'all, it's creepy.
It's Murph
I know you
at the end.
Played it, but it's my favorite. It's one of my favorite parts of the thing. Like,
thank you.
Yeah,
thank you, because some old co-host of mine did not like it.
Well, I think it's hilarious.
And I think the last part reminds me of Murph.
Y'all, it's creepy.
Sorry, old friend of ours. That's from okay. Western.
creepy catch up is just since last we talked, backlog of lots of really interesting dreams. But the thing that just happened last night is I was watching Dr. Sleep, and I think I texted you right after it happened, Steph.
Yeah, you did.
The point where they get to the Overlook, so they've mentioned it all movie, right? When they actually drive up and you see it for the first time, I have two lights in my room, and they're both Wi-Fi lights, and the one over my bed flashed bright. Like not just like, you know how they have the little flickers. That's not what I'm talking about. It went flash so much that I rewound the movie because I was like, that was just the car flashing at you. You just mistook it, you know. And no, the car, you don't see it like head on, like what happened in my room. And I was like, well, isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe creepy, maybe not, but still it was
creepy enough. Me.
Yeah.
And it was at the perfect point in the movie too, you know, because you've been waiting to get to the freaking Overlook the whole movie.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, I love that movie, man, especially the main bad guy woman. What's her name? Mr. Hat?
Or the Hat?
Yeah, she's awesome. And I've been seeing her, the actress. She's been in a bunch of other stuff lately that I've been seeing. But yeah, such a great movie. Such a great movie. And also, since just a reminder here, if you guys love Creepy Ketchup as much as Santosh does, get yourself a Creepy Ketchup t-shirt on our online store. You can, of course, find that on fearscapepodcast.com. Go to the store, check out the Creepy Ketchup t-shirt that we've got. It's pretty cool.
Yep. And yeah, so that's...
What happened to, like, you all used to talk about the myopic mayonnaise and the mystic mustard? And
yeah, so...
I would like to perpet the paranormal poupon.
Excuse me, sir. Do you have any paranormal poupon?
But of course.
The boo barbecue.
Yes.
Or the barbabue.
Barbabue. Barbecue.
I'd go to boo barbecue.
Boobacue.
Boobacue. Yeah, well, that sounds a little dirty. Hey, girl, let me see your boobacues. No.
Anything could be dirty if you make it dirty. So.
Well, yeah. And what's a mystical word that starts with R?
Reiki.
No, that's not good.
I just thought radical. I don't know. R, that's a good one.
That is a good one. Well, whatever. Radical relish.
Ridiculous.
No, I'm done. Let's move into our topic. All right, so we're gonna move right in and talk about Ingrid Cold, not to be confused with Ingrid Hot. This is Ingrid with a D, Cold.
Right. So. Yeah, Ingrid Hot has her own movie. It's a Mothman spoof.
Yeah, it's a porn spoof. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I don't want you to go looking it up.
You were outing the heat misers like... Bruce Wayne identity.
You know? Yeah. Do you know how many boobacues you see in that movie?
Stop. I'm having Hellraiser moments. I'm like, no.
That's got me smiling, like the smiling man.
Yeah.
Ooh, see what I did there?
So, also, I do. Nice. Bring it back around.
So let's chit-chat a little bit about, we are very... inundated with Ingrid Cold, but our audience may not be.
Yeah.
Most people probably only know Ingrid Cold from the Mothman Prophecies movie.
Probably. Yeah. So the Ingrid Cold, or like you say, commonly known as the Smiling Man.
Or the Grinning Man. The which, grinning man, Reddit's got some creepy pictures.
Oh, yeah, I know, right?
And I went out and looked at Reddit for a couple things, and I've got to be honest, my tech skills are pretty strong, but I can't figure out how to navigate Reddit.
Oh, really? I can show you. Once you figure it out, it's easy.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And you you can get not into a rabbit hole, but a Reddit hole that will, you're going to be like, how did I end up here?
Okay.
And you're going to wish you hadn't, because Reddit.
Yeah, I have suggestions for you after this is over. It's like, hell yeah.
So basically, they're back in the 60s, right around the time of Mothman Prophecy. It was all kind of taking place. Or the events, I guess, that were Mothman Prophecies is all taking place. You've got the appearance of Ingrid Cold. And he came around at three noted events.
Yeah, so this happens in West Virginia.
Well,
not the first one, okay. But the main sightings with Woody and things like that all happened, like we said, around the same time as Mothman in West Virginia, close to Point Pleasant. Like, not far from Point Pleasant.
Right. So, going back, though, to the first sighting. So the first sighting is October 16th, 1966, in New Jersey. Two boys, Martin Moose Munov and James Jimmy.
Oh, yeah, those two.
Yeah, we talked about it once. But, yeah, so Moose and Mouse and Jimmy.
Yeah. Hey, Mouse and Jimmy, come over here.
Hey, what you boys doing?
Not quite Jersey, it's more Bronx, but okay.
We're from here.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever actually been to Jersey. So
good luck.
It's a never-ending creepy suburb. Like, never ending. No, seriously, it scared me.
I've been to Jersey.
It's a suburb that doesn't end.
I will say the Jersey that's closer to the shore and closer to New York is really that. But the other side of it is gorgeous state parks.
Oh.
Absolutely gorgeous state parks.
So anyways, in Jersey, on 4th Street, I remember the name of the town, and I don't have it here, but I do remember when we did this as part of our Jersey Devil episode, that they saw this encounter happen was really close to an old mine.
Yes, and it was also close to where the Jersey Devil was, which I found out today that my friend, I'm just going to go ahead and say my high priest instead of saying his real name. My high priest himself is actually from that town where the Jersey Devil was. And I was like, oh man, I wish I would have known. I would have had, I was like, I would have had you on the show. And he was like, oh yeah, I grew up hearing stories about it all the time. My mom's got a bunch of them.
We might have to do a part two.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Fearscape, dropping a deuce on the Jersey Devil.
Hey, why are you two pooping on me? You know nobody's got toilet paper.
I need TP for my Jersey Devil. So they see a figure standing near a fence, which is probably pretty common in 66. But as they walk closer, the figure was a tall, bald man wearing a metal green suit, who was staring right at them with a huge grin.
So this is where the grinning man comes from, right?
Right. Well, actually, I think in all the instances of all the encounters with
Woody,
with Ingrid and his people, they're described as being grinning people.
Hmm. Okay.
So anyways, the idiosyncratic man chased them until they got away from him. UFO sightings were also reported around the area. This is a little quote here. So Jimmy nudged me and said, "Who's that guy standing behind you?" I just assume everybody everywhere in the country has.
As we just did our Bronx accents straight to Tennessee over here.
I looked around and he was behind that fence, just standing there. He pivoted around and looked right at us. Then he grinned a big old grin. I mean, it just sounds country.
I mean, dude, I feel like we're in New Jersey right now. I mean, if this isn't Atlantic City, I don't
y'all going to the Gold Nugget? Oh, y'all know Snooki?
So anyways, they recalled some more frightening details of their encounter. They were recalled that the man in the green suit was unusually tall and had unnatural facial features, such as the lack of ears and a nose. So it's like Voldemort in a green suit smiling.
Right.
So I have like a small interjection that's happening, like one of these weird epiphanies. You know, like how poltergeist activity always seems to center around like girls at puberty age?
Yeah.
Okay. Why are there always two boys at the start of all these stories? Think back to the high strangeness thing. There was two boys in Kentucky that saw the UFO and reported it a county over before the abduction.
Because two boys equal one girl. That's why they say two boys. No, wait. No. It's two girls for every boy. Never mind.
I think it's probably just because boys will be boys and girls will be girls. I don't know. I really don't know.
Two boys, one saucer.
I thought you said sausage.
there might be something there from a whole puberty perspective. I don't know.
Bunny corn sausage.
Yeah. So anyways, we move on to the second sighting. So this is the one we're actually introduced with in the Mothman Prophecies book, movie, and Visitors from Lanyulos. So this man called Woody or Woodrow Derenberger. He was driving on Interstate 77 on his way home, and a UFO appeared to land in front of his truck. Then he described it as an old-fashioned kerosene lamp chimney flaring at both ends. This kind of reminds me.
Yeah, so sideways, though, right, is the way that.
Yeah. So this is like the Green Lantern.
Right. I thought about that, or I also thought about like a TIE fighter without its wings.
Yeah, that's a good description, too, yeah. Flaring at both ends, narrowing down to a small neck, and then enlarging in a great bulge in the center. So, yes, exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
The grinning man came out of the vehicle with a dark tan and walked up to Derenberger and telepathically said his name was Ingrid Cole, and he meant no harm. Cole said he just wanted to know more about the human race, and he would, visit Derenberger again. After the encounter, Derenberger stated that Cole revealed he was from the planet Lanyulos in the galaxy of Ganymedes.
What did he said something exactly. What did he say? And they reference it in like every book that I can find. He's like, my name is Ingrid Cole, and he says something about your planet is different than mine or something like that. Why can't I think of what that?
But I know what you're saying.
Let's see.
And of course, everybody who hears this at the time says, well, Ganymede is not a galaxy. It's a moon. That's no moon. It's a space station. But that's too early. Never mind. I myself have done some. I went down the whole path of what if it is a different star system. And so I looked, and there is a Ganymede star system that's within the Milky Way galaxy that happens to be really close to the same distance away from Earth that Lanyulos is supposed to be away from Earth. So
right. Yeah, he goes on, so still isn't what I was looking for, but Derenberger said, I was very frightened, and as far as I can understand, this was all mental. There were no spoken words from him. I knew what he was asking me, but yet he stood there and his mouth did not move. He had a smile on his face, and he appeared to be very courteous and friendly. He said the conversation lasted about 10 minutes, and Cold told him, we are like you. We eat, we breathe, we sleep, and we even bleed as you do. But he said, before returning to his craft, we will see you again. And so
I think it was just, you know, might have been an attempt to indicate that they were vulnerable, right? So they had vulnerabilities.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, Woody was a normal guy, church-going dude. I mean, 35 years old, had kids, salesman, you know.
I think he sold sewing machines.
Yeah, something along that.
Yeah, or typewriters or something like that. Both things that probably most of our audience don't know what they are.
My mom's a sewing machine, boy. I'll tell you what, she can get going and sew it right up. Sorry, that was my New York accent.
Yeah, say that's your New England accent, right? You're gonna leave now and go to a clam bake.
Yep.
All right.
Did you just say a clam bake?
That's what I heard too.
Third sighting. This happened in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. The Lilly family, which the Lilly family comes up quite a bit in the Kiel book, Mothman Prophecies. And basically they say that they were having some poltergeist activity, and diamond-shaped lights were flying around. The Lily's daughter, Linda, was sleeping one night and awoke to see a man standing over her. It was a man, a big man, very broad. I couldn't see his face very well, but could see that he was grinning at me. He walked around the bed and stood right over me. I screamed again and hid under the covers. When I looked again, he was gone.
Yeah, see, I don't think that was Indrid. I think that was Carl Ardo. We'll talk about them in a minute. But I do want to say this real quick, that I found the quote that I was looking for.
Okay.
So Darren Berger was talking about a point where Indrid looked over at the city lights and asked him, he says, "What do you call that over there?" And Darren Berger said, "Why, that's Parkersburg, and we call that a city." And Cold responded, "Where I come from, we call it a gathering. I come from a place less powerful than yours." That's what I was trying to think of.
Okay.
I come from a place less powerful than yours. And so it's interesting that both of these sightings are sandwiched in between two kind of frightening sightings.
Yeah.
You know?
So I have a theory, as I often do lately, anyways, that I shared with both of you all before the show. But I wanted to kind of pull it up and talk about it a little bit now. And that is, in 1951, I think that's the right year, one of the largest big movies of the era was The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Right. Great movie.
Great, fantastic movie. The remake, not so much. But anyways, in the first sighting of Indrid Cold, you have a seemingly facial feature less individual, right? Mm-hmm. Who's smiling. You look at the first encounter of Klaatu, and he's wearing a helmet. And so all you see is this guy standing there in like a shiny metallic suit wearing a helmet. So in both the movie and in real life, that type of appearance frightened people, right?
Yeah.
So then the encounter with Indrid Cold, you've got a slick back hair individual and seemingly still kind of metallic looking clothes, but seemingly plain clothed. The second encounter with Klaatu, before he changes into like a standard suit, you see him without his helmet and he has slick back hair.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just wonder if they're taking references from pop culture and using that in how they
show themselves. Well, and the skeptic will say that that's where Woody got his idea from, right? You know,
well, but that's yes for Woody, but how do you explain the similarities with the boys in New Jersey? Is that how you say it? I don't know. It's my best attempt. I don't know.
Well, did they see The Day the Earth Stood Still as well?
I don't know. Possibly. It was, let's see, they, well, maybe not, because this is all happening in 66. That came out in 51.
So, yeah.
They would have been like babies, probably.
Well, yeah. I mean.
Or very young. They could have seen it
on a creature feature on the weekend.
That's true, I guess.
You know, on TV at that point.
Yeah.
Don't forget that Kiel himself talks about instances of belief affecting interpretation of the super spectrum. So,
yeah.
In a way, just seeing it, I mean, it's in the group consciousness. I could see it both ways. That they, why wouldn't you keep, not pop culture, why wouldn't they keep track of pop culture? Not that that's that important, but, you know, broadcasts and styles of the time, like even a smile, that would be, you know, a thing that'd be like, oh, they do this a lot when they're trying to be friendly, so why not?
Exactly. So so I'm not really saying it in a way to say that it discredits the, but just maybe to give an explanation as to why the encounters were different. The first, you know, between the first encounter and the second encounter, that there was a physical appearance was so different between the two encounters, because the first one wasn't fruitful, right? They ran.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we need to adjust our approach to have a better experience.
Sure. Well, and even like I said, I mean, you know, Indrid claims to be from Lanulos, and he claims to not be the only one that's going out. In fact, he travels with two other grinning men named Demo Hassan and Carl Ardo.
Yep.
To the other two famous Lanulosians. And who knows? I mean, it could have been another Lanulosian, or, I mean, heck, in the Visitors of Lanulos, we learn about the another set of humanoids.
Yeah, the people who fly around in the pink.
Yeah, and pink, steal stuff. I wish I could remember what they were called. I think he just called them the Inhumanoids.
I think that's what it was called, yeah.
Yeah. And they weren't mean. They just, that was their culture, that if you left something out, it was for someone to take.
Well, and somebody at...
The finder keepers.
Yeah, finders keepers.
Well, that's what I think a lot of the kind of abduction type information at the time was kind of tied to those people that are those Inhumanoids that they didn't realize that they weren't supposed to take people.
Yeah.
You weren't doing anything with your life, finders keepers.
Yeah.
But continuing on talking about Indrid, after this, Woody claims to have been visited by Indrid hundreds of times.
Yeah,
you know, like they became BFFs, and they even took him to places such as Venus, Lanulos,
Saturn,
Mercury, maybe.
I don't remember.
I don't remember
Mercury being on the list.
Maybe I'm just making it up.
But I think So there's two schools of thought. I think that you could go there is that mm-hmm. A, that they actually physically took him, and B, that they took his mind.
Right. We talked about this after speaking with Andrea about the conscious connection.
Right.
That they took him to what he thought he would want to see. So to him, Venus would be filled with rivers and valleys and this beautiful, because back then that was kind of the fantastical view of
right.
it. Right. And that they took his mind. They.
Well, there was even a thing done, I don't remember the year, but some like scientist or whatever supposedly had telescopic
yeah.
pictures of Venus
yeah.
with like naked people running around yep. mm-hmm. and all this kind of stuff. And so yeah, that was already, again, what we've kind of talked about in other cases is they presented him with the scenario that he would be most willing to accept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Though I will say that his trip to Lanulos always seemed different. And there's a part of me that wonders, you know, because it's interesting, because when he's traveling to Lanulos, he's in a separate room from Carl and Indrid and them, if you'll recall.
Yep.
Like, mm-hmm. you know, and you had mentioned last week or on the Fearscape Unhinged about projection, UFO projections as a way to shift their projections right. out. And what if he was put into something like that? So it's kind of a column A, column B. It's like, yes, he did get on the ship and he may have actually gone to outer space, but they had to use that projection ability to mentally project to show him Lanulos, right. to show him this, or even taking him to another planet and just said, hey, this is Venus.
Perhaps, but don't forget, like, a very interesting little tidbit of his Lanulosian visits are that they go from one craft to the...
Mothership.
Yeah.
Mothership is what they call it.
Yeah, I forgot all about the mothership.
Yeah. So, you don't hear a lot of that. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, to project a brain, but then... I've just come across this really interesting theory about our sun and pyramid broadcasting and things like that. So, yeah. you know, using that as a way station kind of thing.
Right.
Sorry, I'm going to get us off topic. Keep on going.
No, that's where we're having round table. Yeah. Go for it. It reminds me of Star Destroyers and TIE Fighters, how the TIE Fighters couldn't go right. far until you get to the new trilogy. Then they could.
Right. So, let's combine a couple of theories that I'm on top of right now, which are more rolling around in my mind.
Careful, don't crush those.
Oh, no, right? Don't crush anybody's dreams. So we're talking about like out-of-body experiences as UFO trips, you know, like in this, right? So why would you need to go to a mothership to rebroadcast, right? That doesn't make sense. That's what my first point was why would you need to go to the mothership to do that unless it was just to flesh out the story? But... you know, it seems a little extra when one could be broadcasting one's mind anywhere anyway. So think about this. It was coming from is it Bosnia? I'd have to look through my notes where this pyramid is, the Pyramid of the Sun, Croatia, I think, is where it is. No, it's the Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun, and how they're supposedly recording different, it's basically broadcasting out, and they were like, well, why is it at this exact point? Well, think about it. The Earth is constantly moving, right? So, I'm trying to make this all make sense.
That's all right.
The pyramid points at the sun because the Earth is always moving. To broadcast from the Earth would never hit the center of our galaxy or any stationary point for that information to go to. So to rebroadcast it through the sun gives you a fixed point that then can be broadcast with more reliability than any planet in orbit. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yep.
I'm looking at pictures of the Bosnian pyramid right now.
Sorry, that took me a while to get there. I'm like, so much data. What's relevant?
it's like a repeater, right? So
Yeah, exactly.
All it's doing is taking what you're sending and boosting the signal and sending it back out.
You've got to reverse the polarity.
Something else, though, that you said, what was the first point that you made? Oh, before you start
talking about the mother
ship. So what if that whole thing was part of the mind altering?
Yeah, mind meld.
Or the whole, you know, so the whole, so like, what if they never left Earth?
Okay.
What if once he went into the ship, that whole thing, leaving Earth, going to the mothership, going from the mothership to wherever, all of that was part of the
inception?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've thought about that as well. I've definitely thought about that because, I mean, he was in a chamber too, wasn't he,
It would be a fantastic way to remain protected, wouldn't it, if you were actually ultra-terrestrial in here, to make up an extraterrestrial story for safety. Right.
And then that's where the psychic skeptics come in, not the normal skeptics, but the ones that, like, you know, are looking at skeptical stories from that point of view, say that, yeah, that they were not extraterrestrial. In fact, they were just trying to make Woody believe that.
Well,
was that military?
Right. Well, and I've said this a lot over the last few weeks, and I'm sure y'all are tired of hearing it, but it seems like the more that I'll have an experience that leads me to think extraterrestrial, like my experience that we had this weekend and the vision that I kind of saw and all that kind of stuff, led me way down the path of extraterrestrial. So then I started thinking about it from an ultra-terrestrial perspective, and I backed up what I was thinking. And since doing that, my activity, it's like, anytime that I question the extraterrestrial narrative, I am either two things happen. Either one, activity drops off severely, or two, I am immediately presented with overwhelming extraterrestrial evidence to reinforce the extraterrestrial narrative.
That makes me so jealous. I'm on the opposite side of the spectrum. I have more supernatural paranormal experience, and I long for a, you know, extraterrestrial contact scenario.
I have them all.
Well, good for you.
No, this UFO sighting that we had the other night is the first I've had in a very long time.
Well,
of mine are paranormal.
This is very, the UFO sighting that we had the other night was very, it was probably the first one I've had in several months that I was able to experience with somebody else. That I couldn't, you know, that I didn't question whether or not I was actually seeing what I was seeing, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was when you said that they were moving, I was literally about to say it, and it was just this, like, refreshingly scary moment,
yeah.
You know? Because it was what I was thinking.
Yep. So, you know, the whole, let's talk a little bit about the potential death of Ingrid Cold.
Okay, before we even get into the potential death, we have to talk about a few other things before we can even get there. Because one thing we've got to talk about is the fact that his daughter has also written a book.
Not Indrid's daughter.
No, not Indrid's daughter. Sorry. Woody Derenberger's daughter has also written a book because she claims to have stayed in contact with Indrid to the point where when Woody died, she claims that Indrid, Carl, and Demi were both at the funeral, or they were all at the funeral.
Right. Well, and the book that the Visitors from Lanielos that I read was a reprint from 2014, and the foreword was written by
Keel, right?
Well, it actually had two. Well, I guess it had a foreword and a preface. So one part of it was written by Derenberger's daughter.
Daughter. Her name is Tanya Derenberger Bowman.
Tanya, thank you.
Yeah.
So what was really interesting is that she said in the first printing of the book, the editor left out a lot of detail. And so the only way to ever have all of the detail back was to have the original manuscript, which they don't have.
Which they don't have.
And so she went through with the editor in 2014 to try to piece the parts back together to fill in the missing gaps that she remembered that her dad told her about or whatever. So I don't know. I haven't gone back and read the original printing versus the 2014 reprinting to see what's different.
But yeah, I do find that funny too. Yeah. I mean, we're always talking about hiding things that the government is always trying to hide things. But yeah, her book is called Beyond Lanielos, Our 50 Years with Indrid Cold. I have not read this yet. But it is on my reading list. I'm very interested. She was also interviewed on Hellier, which is where we found out where she said that Indrid showed up to her dad's funeral.
Right. Well, from that interview on Hellier, we also found out that apparently Indrid has
died.
Has kicked the bucket, so to speak.
And that's why I wanted to mention that first bit. So here's Indrid hanging with the Derenberger family for a lifetime, and she claimed to have sightings with him even after, you know, Woody's death and things like that. But she said that he finally died. That I think Carl Ardo was the one that told her.
Well, Carl and
Demo
is actually Carl and Demo showed up one night when she was sleeping and told her that Indrid was chasing somebody in a craft and crashed and died.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even like he died of natural causes. And that's one of the things you learn in Lanielos is that their life expectancy is really long, like into the hundreds of years versus our life expectancy. So it wouldn't have been necessarily uncommon for him to have been, you know, in his 90s, let's say, when he met Woody back in the 60s, and then still be around when that interview for Hellier had happened just, you know, I think she had posted it on Facebook like in 2012 or 2013 or something like that, that she got the bad news. So all that to be said, that supposedly Indrid is now passed beyond. But what you learn in the book of Lanielos, or like Visitors of Lanielos, is that he had a daughter and two sons. So seemingly there are other colds that are out doing whatever he was doing. If he was like a, you know, was he a PR person? Was he a, you know, a scout? You know, like what was that? That's the part.
Was he essentially Captain Archer or Kirk or those guys where they just had to make contact?
Right.
You know?
Well, you know, so getting back, I'm going to backtrack just a little bit, talking about the mother trip a little bit. If you also look at, again, pop culture influences, a lot of the, like, Star Trek at the time was airing. And what did they do? They had a main ship, and then they would take shuttlecraft down to the planet.
Right.
And so, again, if they borrowed from pop culture to to affirm that this was the natural state of things, again, just to help tell the story or to convince the participant that this was the appropriate, you know, experience.
That makes me sad a bit, because that's exactly how I felt with the religious overtones. It was very much selling it to a predominantly white Christian audience at the time, and you can tell in the way that it was written. you know? I'm kind of like, ugh, I had to scoff so many times.
Yeah, I was very surprised by that. Yes, yes.
But I think that was very much what Josh is talking about. It was, this is the predominant audience of the time. The slick back hair. You know, it was the audience of the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and then also, I guess, what could... Because it seemed like they were always... and the book doesn't really talk about it that much, but it seems like there was always a conflict between the Lanlosians and something else. Right? There was always some kind of... even in his supposed death, he was chasing something. You know, what do you chase if not some sort of a conflict?
Sure.
So,
I mean, the fact that the Inhumanoids were there already tells us there's a ton more other species out there.
Exactly. So the fact that they're interacting that way, and if there is a conflict, perhaps Ingrid faked his death.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. I was going to say, did he pull a Princess Diana? But he was the one doing a chasing, and then and even more so, yeah, like... Could it be going deep undercover, even deeper than he already was here?
Well, and if you really wanted to sell it, right, you would tell the only person who of the human race maybe who had stayed in contact, and then she would get it out to the social world, yeah. Just to kind of reaffirm that Ingrid is gone, but in all actuality, he's not.
Well, it's interesting because, when you're reading Visitors from Lanlos, Ingrid very much says a million times that he's made contact and he's doing all these things with Woody so that Woody can share.
Yeah.
Almost like the Jehovah's Witnesses can share the joy of Lanlos, you know, to let the
we're world not essentially.
Yeah. To say we're not so bad. And so that panic does not ensue, right. Which is what we hear a lot from government institutions and documentaries and things like that. They talk about they didn't want to get it out because they were afraid of the panic.
Well, think back to Campbell's Hell, Stefan, and remember the weird bathroom entity that spoke to me and what that female voice is. We're not all that bad.
Yeah.
I'm like, ooh,
I've talked to Josh and I've talked about a lot of it here on the show as well, but I mean, there's still, we haven't even scratched the surface of those things. It's interesting, man. Ingrid Cold's a very interesting character. You know, and there's some people that some people, hellier conspiracy theorists, that think that Terry Wrist is Ingrid Cold.
I hadn't heard that.
To me, I guess I'm strictly basing this off of Darren Berger's portrayal. The two characters are so very different to me. Ingrid was always about being up front, you know, whereas Terry Wrist is very hidden.
Well, it could be what is the goal, right? So in the Darren Berger encounter, like you said, it was to get him to see that we're not bad.
Yeah.
So that he'll go off and tell the world we're not bad.
Yeah.
But he could now, 50 years later, have a different purpose or goal.
Well, and even then, let's talk about the origin of the Lanlosians. So yes, the origin of the Lanlosians are that they were Earthlings. They were humans.
Right.
That they...
Ooh, my mind!
Went, and it was very Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, very much so.
But it's like they went off to... I don't know whether they were discovering a planet or they were Avenue 5 in it and they just happened to get lost or what. But they ended up crashing on Lanlos and essentially developing a whole new society, and that it happened thousands of years ago.
And developing telepathy, don't forget.
And if you're watching Picard, something similar is happening on there, where they're talking about something that happened like tens of thousands or 100,000 years ago or something like that, that basically future technology had once happened before.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, is that the case? Did they come from Earth, or was that something, you know, to make Woody understand better? But if so, yeah, like, talk about a time loop. My brain is blown.
So anybody who happens to be listening and thinking, well, Josh has been saying that maybe they stole from pop culture. This is, what, 14 years before the 70s version? Was there another version of Battlescar before the 70s version?
No. But even then, the 70s version didn't get into it like the newer version, basically saying that it started Earth, so to speak. And, you know, it's like reverse of that. It's like reverse of that. This is saying that that species started, or that those Earthlings started Lanulos.
Right. You
know? Well, but there were also already beings on Lanulos as well. Remember, like it wasn't just seeded by Earthers. Earthers crashed.
Earthers. a little bit of the expanse coming through here.
You know, it's Archer. Hey, you talk Beltakin, you know, Tom?
Hey, just because I'm 6'5", don't mean I've only ever been in 0G.
I love that show. Actually, I love all the shows that we're talking about so far.
All the shows. No, I forgot that there were others there.
It pays mention. It glosses over them. So.
Were they humanoids or were they more like animals?
Yeah, well, remember, because he said that the Earthers basically kept to themselves.
Okay, so they didn't.
And then once they split up, they started integrating.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
I do remember that. Remember that now. Much is probably where they gained their psychic abilities and stuff. Even though they talked about they just got comfortable with each other, that humans can do this as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and what's... I really wish that they would have, because they said, we can teach you. I wish you would have written more about
it. Maybe it was in the manuscript, because it seems like he was setting it up to explain how to teach us how to do it.
A key come through for me was learning how to let go of a thought, right?
Yes, we've been practicing that a lot. That's where we've been sending numbers to one another, and I've been sending mental nudes to both of you.
I've been getting them. Excuse me while I COVID. Okay, I'm back.
So yeah, the whole thought around telepathy and just that it's not they're not forcing it. They're just, like you said, they're putting it out there. And then if you're in tune to receive it, you're receiving it.
Which led to their society of peace.
Right.
Like that ability.
You're not hiding anything.
Yeah. Anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like, I think Stefan might have told you, like, we've developed a lot. Like, I, with one of my best friends in high school, developed a low level form of telepathy that we proved, you know, when Stefan met me, I was like, yeah, we can do this thing. Watch. And then Stefan started experimenting just to try and summon me and mess with me a lot of times.
We still do it. We call it witch mail.
Still proving, you know, like, yeah. And what I think is interesting to jump onto that is that the best connections were the best friends. If you think about that, Steph.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And family, like tight family.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The ones that you resonate most.
Like, we were both always able to get our mothers to call us.
Yep.
Yeah. Always.
Oh, well, I think I can say her name. Liz has seen me, like, I don't want to say echolocate, psycholocate, mom, you know, when they went on that big trip and they had moved and hadn't told me yet. And I was like, drive this way. And it was a good 30, 45 minutes of just randomly driving and me finally honing in on her.
Yeah.
So she still talks about that one. I'm like, yeah, that's nothing.
See, when I was at Campbellsville, the only way I could get my mom to call me is if I made a collect call. And said, hey, this is Josh, I'm doing okay, you can accept this if you want to.
10-10-3-2-1.
at Campbell's Hell, one of my favorite stories is we played this game with our answering machines, a couple of us, where it was, you know, every time you called was a new bit of the story and everything. And I just finished like recording a new story and I just stopped, walked out of my dorm onto campus and out those front gates, you know, like no reason, just was like, okay, this way, that way, no, kind of very like beep 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 dowsing kind of thing. And then up drove my grandmother with some of those hot dog chili buns, you know, that they sold at that at that store. And I was like, Mama, and she's like, yeah, I thought I'd just come find you. And I was like, don't you think you should call first? She's like, no, I figured I'd run into you. I was like, yeah. Do you know, I just walked out, you know, like, and yeah, just flat out, like, got summoned by my grandmother or something, you know. I was like, well, thanks for bringing food.
Mm-hmm. She knew. And don't forget my dream that I had.
Yeah.
Where I saw the Mothman become Indrid Cold, then become you, Josh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and I've had a vision of Indrid Cold, and he told me that the Greys are androids.
Okay, so I've been waiting on this one to come up. You're using the word, like, okay, I got to flip through my thing. You've mentioned this like a podcast, during the Hellfire Club. And I had to write, Josh says Greys are androids. I immediately thought, wrong word, that implies machine tech. Think biotech, like Blue Avatar, augmented reality meat suits.
Yeah. And
why risk biocontamination either way? And whatever, what better way for a type of non-three-dimensional being to interact with this space? Like, think about all the effort that we went through to corporealize. I'll be right back. Someone's shouting for me.
Yeah, I thought about that. I mean, there's been theory before that Greys are indeed just spacesuits themselves. Like, what we see is them.
Well, there's the movie with the Fire in the Sky movie where, mm-hmm. you know, we've talked about it before. We stumble around the ship and he comes across the big-eyed spacesuit and he turns it around and it is just a spacesuit. But, yeah, it's really interesting that I have had. So, you know, this is going to cross over to ghosts a little bit in Intelligent Haunts. But if Indrid is dead, truly dead, and he had some sort of a conscious spirit, could that conscious spirit still be around to interact with you on the mental level?
Well, I mean, it all depends on the idea of a soul. Is that a strictly human thing? Is that, well, I mean, they were humans too, I guess.
Right.
They
shared the same DNA.
Yeah. I don't know.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah, but which strand of DNA? The Denisovian strand or one of the other? You know, like how many are we up to now? 13 or something?
Yeah, I mean, they said it was thousands of years ago.
Right.
Maybe that's what happened. That's where that missing link is it was their subset that took off.
Yeah.
You know?
So then we just spawned again?
No, we just... okay, I don't know.
Sorry, I had an alarm go off and I didn't hear where we just were. There's been a lot of distraction going on.
He basically said, does Indrid Cold have a ghost?
Oh, yeah, and is that, the, like, does that data set somehow have interactivity? And I was, oh, yeah, like, I'm like, ooh, you know, can Lemuelosians upload themselves to the cloud? Can we interact with that? Because, yeah, fascinating.
Well, I've been not to get too far off on a tangent, but I'll just want to say that right now I'm trying to figure out, and maybe this is the wrong terminology, but how to astral project. And I think I've been close several nights, but I get hung up on how do I know when I have, and so then I usually end up just falling asleep. And so
okay, so do you remember your dreams?
So, yeah, a lot of times.
Okay, well, that's the same as learning how to access shadow memories when the body reintegrates. You're already on the way. Do you suffer? I know Stefan suffers from night hag. Do you ever suffer from night hag?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, if you catch yourself, that's a good telling way that you projected, but you didn't reintegrate. So one of the things, you all talked about this a lot on the podcast, and I learned this in Albuquerque, actually, Stefan, at Blue Eagle.
Mm-hmm. I missed that shop. I hope it's
there. It's where I was first turned on to mugwort to help with those things. So mm-hmm. if you're suffering from ones again, get a little bit of mugwort tea and stuff. It helps smooth the astral transition. And I read a book by called Astral Dynamics by Robert Bruce. Amazing book. Robert the Bruce. Thick book, but pretty solid in its kind of thing. And since then, I think once I really started working on developing my astral body, the night hag, I don't suffer from night hag anymore. Like, I've trained myself now to be like, oh, cool, roll out of your body. You know, this is just a failed reintegration. And roll out again and come back.
So what was mugwort? Is that what it is?
Mugwort. You do not want mugwort.
I was just going to say.
Yeah, get you some of that mung tea, Josh.
You might be able to get warts from munging. but
Mung-doll.
Not want mungwort.
So mugwort, yeah, is
a tea that aids in astral workings. Yes.
Would you say it's like Astral Glide?
Astral Glide.
Don't use my people's terms. And but you ain't heard that in a minute, have you, Seth?
No, I have not. So,
for those that don't know, if you're not gay, don't use gay terminology.
Joking. Yeah, so you're us straight people are only allowed to use KY jelly.
No. Yeah, right, exactly. Equate brand.
Yeah. Gross. Equate brand. All right, so I want to quickly wrap up Darren Berger here.
Does anybody else call him Darren Berger? Like burger.
Yeah, like burger. Darren Cheeseburger. So at one point in his life, after he'd remarried and moved back to Parkersburg, you know, he never stopped claiming this. He never showed any regrets, but at one point he kind of questioned his own sanity. And so he consulted with a psychiatrist, and the doctor there could find no evidence of mental illness or any other psychosis that would have explained his unwavering belief in the being known as Indrid Cold. And curiously, shortly after his session with Darren Berger, the psychiatrist claimed to have had communication with someone who identified himself as Indrid Cold as well. And this was, as Darren Berger said, my proof was that he had Indrid reach out to the psychiatrist. The nature of their contact was never made public. What is known is that, according to the psychiatrist, the conversation did not take place in person or by phone, but happened telepathically. And finally, Woodrow Darren Berger passed away in 1990 at the age of 74. Despite losing his family, his livelihood, and his reputation, he always stood by his story. And according to those close to him, Darren Berger and Cold never lost contact with one another.
Well, you know, we've talked a lot about, it came up during the Vatican Vault episode, as well as some other episodes around like Bigfoot and such, that people who were so adamant about the story on their deathbed made like a deathbed confession, which right. They basically claimed everything was made up or whatever.
Yeah.
This didn't happen.
Yeah, no, Darren Berger did not. And in fact, one of the things that makes his story more incredible is the fact that the intergalactic connection that he had with Indrid always took a toll on him. Not personally, but physically. Following any communication with Cold, he would always suffer a blinding migraine headache that would leave him temporarily incapacitated, and he still remained receptive to messages for the remainder of his life. So it caused him an immense amount of pain, and yet he still chose to do it.
Chose to do it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very interesting, because I would have been like, all right, we're good, right? Yeah. Can you just go ahead and open your mouth and talk to me? That would be great.
Can you write it down? That'd be great.
Write it down? And so speaking of Jessens, I do think it's funny because when he talked about Lanulos, he talked about having – they had moving sidewalks.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, the dreams of the future.
Yeah.
Moving sidewalks. And I do. Every time that I'm on at the airport and I'm on that moving sidewalk, I'm like whistling the Jetsons theme.
That's not it.
That's not the
Nope. What is that?
What? You just did the Simpsons.
Yeah, you did the Simpsons.
Yep. I can't think of the Jetsons theme now.
Meet George Jetson.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. His wife. What's her name? And their kid.
Oh, Roy.
And their daughter, what's her face?
Jane.
Judy.
Judy, yeah.
And their new bar opening up on the astral plane.
Yeah.
What'd you call it? By some witches?
Oh, by the witch.
By the witch. By the witch. Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've gotten about what we need from Indrid Cold, though I do want to remind everyone, we have laid a little loose on talking about Mothman because we are going to cover Mothman down the road, yep. In which we'll talk a little more about some connection to Indrid Cold there. I didn't want to get deep into Mothman because that's its whole episode. And we will hopefully be going out there in the next few months if coronavirus does not keep us into our homes to go to Point Pleasant. Any final thoughts on Injured Cold?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that what got brought up during this is like, what was he really doing? You know, like, yeah, he was spreading goodwill. That's what he said. But he was obviously stationed here. Right? Because if he died in a crash, if he's used to chasing off in humanoids, we can infer that he had a job of sorts, a role beyond goodwill ambassador.
Yeah.
So what was that, I wonder?
I even took it as the goodwill ambassador part was like a hobby.
like Arthur Weasley. Well, you know, just obsessed with muggles.
I mean, but he just, you know, he got tired of always doing the same thing day in and day out and took it upon himself to try to change the dynamic with Darren Berger, or even, you know, he attempted before with the two boys and couldn't get anywhere until he tried again with Darren Berger. And then to your point, Stefan, later with Lily and the Lily family, maybe that was Ardo or somebody trying to have their own type of experience as well.
Right. Or what's coming through right now for me, get ready for this, and we've already talked about time loops and travel. What if he's back to seed the thought, because humans will eventually need to go to Lanulos to start this all happening in the first place?
Yeah. Wow.
Gets back into
science fiction is science future, so maybe become part of science fiction to become part of science future.
Yeah. I don't think Indrid is dead. I think that if he was real, I think that I'm with you that he's a little undercover. Maybe he has gone up in rank.
Ooh.
So he's been promoted to a different, you know, whether they have war or not, there's always military in some way, shape, or form, or government.
Right.
So maybe he's worked his way up, and maybe he's a Men in Black now, because the you know, a lot of the descriptions of the Men in Black kind of fit the Lanulosians a little bit.
Yeah, they're different. So they're similar but different. I think the Men in Black, so that he talks, you know, we're going to get into a whole nother string again. So they talk about it, you know, about the separation. So I think that the Men in Black are actually a different group of humans who branched off.
Well, they all seem that way. If you think about it, if they're not using any glamoury spells, and they are what they look like, we've got the Lanulosians, who are either seem very Native American or very Middle Eastern, right?
Or Persian, I always.
You're Persian, right? Or you have the Blondes, which seem very Viking, very Norwegian, very white. You have the Men in Black that always seem to be very Asian, like Chinese, Japanese, seeming.
Yep.
Are they, you know, are they offshoots of us?
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Like, maybe thousands of years ago, when the humans first set off into space, it was one group, and over time they've broken up into different races, if you want to call it that.
Either that, or it's the opposite. I mean, you know, there is a theory that the only true humans are African Americans. Humanity started there, and everything came out from there. And if you think about some of these ancient astronaut theories, that these species could have come down and intermingled and came from that. So instead of them coming from us, we come from them, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you know. Which ones were the ones that messed with the neo-hominids?
Yeah, which one?
Yeah.
I don't know, because, I mean, I can't think of any alien types out there that seem African-American, and so they seem the most earthling to me, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, there's literally a theory that's just popped in my head.
Even though the Native American peoples have myths of literally coming from this ground.
Yeah. You know, but so, they also, I mean, they also have the sky people and the star people, too.
They do have sky people, yeah.
So, like, I mean, they've even had a dream of sky people.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's a play I directed once.
I did costumes.
He did. Anything else? Josh, any other theories before we get to the listener story?
Nope.
All right. Well, let's get into the listener story then. That was Indrid Cold. Like I said, we could really keep going into this. And in fact, when I finally read Tanya's book, I'll probably be revisiting Indrid Cold again.
He might be revisiting us.
Yeah, he might be. He might be.
It's out there now. I mean, we've tagged ourselves. Flashlight
on. So this next listener story that we've got this week comes from another person that I've met on the Haunted History of Kentucky. Their name is Gene Moorfield, and they actually have two stories, but we're only going to use one today. If you have a story too, your listener story of the paranormal or of aliens or UFOs or contact of any way, shape, or form, or psychic abilities or anything like that, send those to fearscapepodcast@gmail.com. But like I said, this comes from Gene Moorfield, and this is their story.
This is a true ghost story. We grew up in a two-story house that was built around 1900 in Lexington, Kentucky. I am the oldest, and I heard a woman's voice speak to me during a thunderstorm one night. I saw shadowy figures of a woman out of the corner of my eyes at different times of the day. My youngest brother had much the same experience. However, my other brother and sister experienced nothing. After my mother died, the family home was sold to a nice young couple with a baby. Years later, I stopped by my old home and was reminiscing when the lady who bought it came out and asked me if I had lived there. I said I had, and she gave me a tour of my old home. Almost everything inside was the same. Her young son was now probably in the first grade. As I was leaving, she asked if my mom had died in the house, and I told her no and asked her why. She told me her young son had seen someone and heard voices, particularly a woman. Is it possible that the ghost that haunted me and my brother now haunts this young child?
I always wondered, is haunt a negative word, or is it just is it a happening?
Wait, hold on. Like, as in, is it a pejorative nowadays? Because yeah, like haunt used to be like that old haint, like the word haint.
The haint.
An Appalachian slang is a negative word, you know, like, but referring to the same other world.
Yeah, I mean, haunt, if you think about it, does come off negative. I mean, like, what would you call a home that has a positive ghost? Would you still use the word haunted?
Yeah, so the point that I'm trying to make is just because there's a ghost in the house doesn't mean that it is negative intent, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it's trying to help. Maybe it's trying to just communicate. So I don't want to necessarily get hung up on, because we talk a lot about ghost stuff and we always use the word haunt, but I just, haunt implies rattling chains and slamming doors.
I've never heard another term. Maybe Keith age knows one. I mean, being around much longer, or even Andrea. Visitation I've heard before, you know, or co-living. I don't know.
I mean, but there's the fairy lore of having helpful spirits there. So Brownie. Yeah. And things like that are helpful. And I think Hobgoblin might have that helpful thing, but it's become negative nowadays.
I don't know. Good question to research and look into for sure. Any listeners out there, if you've heard another term that doesn't come across as negative, that still describes a spirit or ghost living in your home, what would that be?
Yeah.
We're going to get out of here. Thank you, Santosh, so freaking much for joining us today.
What a great show.
I'm still like, we're just getting into it now. What do you mean?
I know. We got to go. But no, thank you so much. And we will, of course, gladly have you back, especially when we get in to do Mothman prophecies and stuff like that. We'd love to have you back.
I want my own getting spooky with.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, we absolutely need to get spooky with, because I'm sick of telling your stories.
You do it so well. Not true. Some of them you wake up and I'm like, what? That's an interesting telling.
It's all about perspective. we're going to get out of here. You guys, please make sure to follow us on all of our social media at Fearscape Pod. You can find us on Facebook, on Instagram, and the Twitters, as well as our website.
Yep, fearscapepodcast.com. We've added some new stuff out there. We've got a little guest section. So as we have guests on the show, we'll have some information about them. So you'll get to read a little bit about the people we have on, as well as if you want to pick up, you know, for those that are authors or whatever, if you want to pick up any of their books, you can. And then also there's a revamp of the store is coming soon. So be sure to check back often to see, and of course we'll communicate when that revamp occurs.
Yeah, in the meantime, go to our regular store. But one of the cool things, one of the revamps is happening, is because we are going to be introducing, for our blanket huggers out there, the Fearscape blanket.
Yep.
We've had some people asking us for a Fearscape blanket, so we have created one, and our new store that we'll have soon will have you, so you can get your very own Fearscape blanket, so that when you listen to our show, you can indeed hug that. And I may make one with just me and Josh's face, so you can hug us. So be on the lookout for that. All that can be found at fearscapepodcast.com. Make sure to click on those books. If you want any of those books, you can go straight to their Amazon pages, straight from those links on our website. You can get their books. Kevin's got a lot of great books. Andrea's got a lot of great books. You know, the list goes on.
Yep.
And eventually I'd love to put our resources down as well, the books that we mention and talk about, you know, all that jazz. Anything else we need to mention before we roll?
Nope.
All right. So. Any final words, Santosh?
You can reach me at SantoshDavid333 across most social media platforms. I'm very bad at social media, but you can do it. Also, stop on by the Witch, coming to an astral plane near you.
Next to the pizza joint, the astral plane. we're going to get out of here. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. This has been Stefan. I will catch you on the flip side.
This has been Josh. The truth is out there.
Santosh?
This has been Santosh, and I still haven't come up with a byline.
All right, everybody. Remember, hold those blankets extra tight because things tend to get spooky. We'll see you guys later.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
I'm so glad you were able to join us for that horrifying discussion. I hope they didn't frighten you too much. Tune in next week for even more research into the nightmarish and haunting creeps and spooks that we tell ourselves don't exist, but we know they do. Make sure you have your blankets, that you hold them extra tight. Next time on Fearscape.